Tim McMahon, ESPN, Hoop Collective, joins the show to give his rundown on the Jazz after seeing them take on the Dallas Mavericks. This is Roundball Roundup on UtahJazz.com. I'm JP Chunga on the Utah Jazz Podcast Network, presented by First Colony Mortgage, the official mortgage lender of the Utah Jazz, and MLS number 3112. There's no better plugged-in national reporter on the Utah Jazz than Tim McMahon. Got his first look on them on Thursday, but he's been connected with this organization for a little bit. What's the national view on year two of Will Hardy in charge? I asked him that and why he said liaison wrong. You know, the important stuff. Enjoy. It's Tim McMahon, Roundball Roundup, UtahJazz.com.
It's high-level journalism there, JP.
Howdy, Parker. It is a pleasure. I didn't realize that the Roundball Roundup was going all the way strong for the entire regular season.
Every single game, not taking on. There's no rebuild on the podcast.
All right.
Tell me what happened with liaison.
Just a word that I've seen before. I know what it means. Have never said it, and it's just kind of just, you know, it's like John Collins when you just kind of get caught, you know, like sometimes you get dunked on. That word dunked on me.
Lays on.
That was close enough.
It was almost there, yeah.
Lazy zone, something like that.
See a couple lazy zones from the Jazz a little bit.
Yeah.
But 10,000 foot view, the national picture of the big look on this team. They have the draft picks. We know all the things. What is the view nationally on what the Jazz are doing and the direction of this team?
You know, honestly, right now the Jazz really aren't on the national radar. They are a small market team that's in the early stages of a rebuild. It just is what it is. And it's kind of been a weird rebuild in the sense that it was a total teardown, right? I mean, they literally traded the entire starting five from what had been a perennial playoff team, including, you know, two guys who are multi-time all-stars. But they haven't really bottomed out. But both of the last 2 years, obviously competitive until the trade deadline, and then essentially pulled the plug by trading multiple rotation players without getting back rotation players, which understandable, but it's just been a weird rebuild. In the sense that they've torn it down, but they haven't bottomed out. You know, I think you can argue that they did get really, really good value, especially on the Donovan Mitchell deal, because Lauri Markkanen's an all-star caliber player. Colin Sexton is a good player. There's picks to come there. But I think the biggest question, and this is the question for any team that doesn't have a top shelf superstar, is how are they going to get one? And I'm not sure what that path is.
You said this on some sort of avenue last year, but the superstar for the Jazz might be Will Hardy. What have you seen from him year two, coaching basically his fourth team?
Yeah, again, what we know about Will Hardy is when he has a chance to be competitive, his team will be competitive, you know, to the point of overachieving. So, you know, again, the thing before they traded Conley, the best thing about the first half of that season is it eliminated any doubt whether Will Hardy was a legitimate NBA head coach. You know, the Jazz were the biggest surprise in the NBA in the early stages of that season. Certainly had a chance to compete for a play-in or playoff spot, and decided to go a different direction, which is understandable. But again, the good thing there is it proves that this, you know, baby-faced at the time rookie head coach is cut out for the job. And you know, at some point,
we're going to find, you know, hopefully you'll find out just how good of a coach Will Hardy is, because he's going to have the pieces to, you know, compete for playoff spots, compete in the playoffs. But the Jazz are a little bit away from that. So I think the most important part of his job right now is continuing to build the culture and then the development of the younger players on the roster. And listen, I know it's been frustrating for Jazz fans that Taylor Hendricks, the number 9 overall pick, really didn't get rotation minutes until the Jazz decided that winning wasn't necessarily the goal, to put it very politely, until the tank note phase started. But you know, Will's whole thing is he doesn't hand out free minutes. He didn't feel like Taylor Hendricks was ready for NBA minutes, and I think the development of Walker Kessler is going to be a fascinating thing to monitor over the next year or so. He had a great rookie year, you know, all rookie selection, was on Team USA, and it hasn't been linear progression. There's been a little bit of a, I would say, regression even. And look, Kessler right now is one of the best rim protectors in the league. He has a long way to go on the offensive end, and I know Will is trying to give him the map to becoming the kind of offensive player that he needs to be a 30 plus minute per game, you know, franchise center type of guy. And it will be fascinating to see how that goes over the next year or so.
Get on that Walker Kessler better on the offensive end, because it's not that they need to start feeding him balls in the post. He needs to contribute in the ways that Rudy did, which was being the elite screener and getting their offense humming that way. How can he get better in the offseason beyond just let's feed him a lot of touches in the post?
Yeah, and you're right. He's never going to be a guy. You know, there's only a few of those in the league. He's not going to be Nikola Jokic. He's not going to be Joel Embiid. He's not even going to be Jonas Valanciunas. He's going to be a role player offensively, but you hit it. He has to become an outstanding screener. Like, if you're going to be a non-shooting 7-footer in today's NBA, you better be a really good screener. And right now, he's not. It's a lot of technique. It's a lot of understanding how to read the situations. You know, what's the angle of the screen? What's the timing of it? You know, all those kind of things. He has to get better at all those facets. Look, you don't see very many guys who have 2 years of NBA rotation experience playing in summer league, but I don't think it would be the worst idea in the world for Walker Kessler to play at least some summer league. So, because it's one thing for coaches to try to work on that stuff in individual workouts, but screening is not an individual thing, right? It's like one of the kind of the epitome of fitting into the team concept. So, you know, I don't know if that's something that he would consider, but I don't think it would be the worst idea in the world. And he wouldn't be the first guy. You know, I remember Isaiah Stewart played in summer league after his second NBA season. You know, I think there's this thing where it's like, you can't do that because of some sort of perception thing around the league. Dude, do you care about perception or do you care about getting paid? Because what Will Hardy and the Jazz are trying to do is put Walker Kessler in a position to get a huge next contract because they want him to be as valuable as he can possibly be. So, again, I don't know if that's something that's even been kicked around, but I think it would be an intriguing idea for him.
And doubly so if he's working with Keontae some more in the summer.
Yeah, and, you know, Keontae and, you know, Taylor Hendricks, I think, obviously is going to get a lot of summer league experience this year simply for the fact that he got zero last year because he was hurt, which is a big part of the reason that he was so far behind to start the season. But you very well, like, when fans buy their tickets for the Salt Lake City Summer League, they very well could be buying tickets to see a big part of the Jazz's core for the, you know, next 5 years or so.
What have you made of Keontae's rookie season? Comes onto the scene, he's not immediately the lead guard, but once he's gotten it from Will, as they've started to spoon feed him a little bit more and more, he's gotten more confident as the years went on.
Yeah, and look, they're really, really excited about him. Will hasn't made any attempt to hide that. You know, he thinks that Keyonte George has future star type of potential. It's been an up and down rookie year, which is to be expected for a, you know, one and done guard who is learning how to play on the ball really for the first time in his life. He wasn't a point guard in high school. He wasn't a point guard at Baylor. You know, they call a lead guard in Utah, but whatever. You know, he still has been the primary facilitator, the primary initiator. And so there's been a lot of times where, you know, you can see this is a rookie who is learning on the job, but there's also been a lot of times where you see, okay, I understand why they think this kid has star potential. You know, whether it's the scoring, whether it's kind of some of the natural passing ability that he has. Now, I'm fresh off of seeing the Jazz live in Dallas. That was not one of those times where you see the star potential drip. And he had a rough night that night. But again, you don't overreact to a one-and-done rookie having a rough night. And this, I think playing Dallas in Dallas might be especially tough for him because, you know, it's his hometown game. So I don't know how many people he had in the stands this time. I know the first time they came through, it was like, you know, 20 or 30. And I think there's some natural pressure that comes along with that.
I was just going to bring that up. Him being at home probably didn't help. And also, Dallas, last time they were in there, it was the masterpiece game.
Yeah, I actually went to see the Jazz at shoot-around that day, then jumped on a flight to Vegas for the in-season tournament. So I missed the masterpiece of dog stuff. What's crazy is I did see the previous time that the Jazz lost by 50, which also happened to be in Dallas. And that one was when the Jazz were actually a contending team. So,
but they also flipped the script on Dallas when they beat them on their home floor with all of their zones and shut down Kyrie and Luka on that.
Yeah, and that was Kyrie's first game back after missing about a few weeks with that heel contusion. Which again, I think that game gets back to the "Hey, Will Hardy knows what he's doing" category.
Coming along slowly with Taylor Hendricks. Missed Summer League, like you mentioned. He's had the flashes, blocking Kevin Durant. He blocked Jimmy Butler on a couple of possessions when they played Miami. You see the flashes of potential. What is the read on him and his ceiling?
He's got a chance to be an elite defensive player. I mean, just the physical tools, you know, the height, the length, the athleticism. When the Jazz came through here, I was talking to a coach who said, you know, his ability to get back into plays, like there are times where your jaw just hits the floor. The flip side of that, as I said, we wish he didn't have to get back in so many plays, but just, you know, just that natural ability. So the comp that I heard for him earlier this season when he wasn't playing was like a supercharged Robert Covington, which Robert Covington, you know, was a very, very good role player in the league for a long time, kind of that 3-and-D role player. Now, supercharged. Hendricks is bigger. He's more athletic. I think one big difference between him and Covington is Covington was always a great help defender. Hendricks has a chance to be a true stopper, a guy who, hey, you know, whether it is Luka Doncic or Victor Wembanyama, you've got the toughest assignment, 1 through 5, at least 1 through 4 on a nightly basis. He has a chance to be that kind of a guy. Offensively, he's got miles and miles and miles to go. I mean, he really, you know, he's athletic. He's shown some flashes of being able to shoot the ball, but from the simplest things is like, you know, how are your feet positioned when you catch the ball? He needs to be built up from the fundamental basics, you know, ground up. And again, that's why this summer is going to be huge for him. You know, I think he'll be a guy who is going to be on the floor for the vast majority of minutes in Salt Lake City and in Vegas for the summer league stuff. And that should be a great experience for him. But, you know, he's got, like, a lot of times if a lottery pick gets sent down to the G League, they light the G League up. He didn't do that, right? And I don't think he's ever going to be a primary scorer. You know, I don't think he's ever going to be a guy who's going to be averaging 22, 24 points per game. I also don't think he needs to be a major asset for the Jazz, but he can't be an offensive liability.
Yeah, he can't be somebody that you're looking at and you say we don't have to guard. Definitely.
Yeah.
Bryce Sensabaugh has no problem on that end, at least offensively. He wants to have the ball in his hands. He wants to score. It's the defense that people want to see from him. What have you heard in a comp for him and what he can be at the NBA level?
Yeah, I mean, the sky-high, way-too-optimistic comp for him, and it's really about body type, but Caron Butler. You know, he's a big-bodied guy who has some natural scoring ability. And so, you know, the Caron Butler was a comp that I heard this summer. And again, not that he's going to be that type of player who I think made a couple of all-star games, or that level of player, rather, but that type. And, you know, something that Sensabaugh is really going to have to be diligent about is diet and conditioning and all those kind of things. It is a really, really tough league to play in, especially on the wing, if you're not in great shape. And he does have, you know, he has a body type where I think he's a naturally, you know, thick body guy. And, you know, he just has to, again, really be careful about and committed about being in as good a shape as possible, just because it's hard to play defense in this league, even if you're in great shape. It's especially hard if you're, you know, 10 or 15 pounds heavy.
Veteran Lauri Markkanen heading into this year, he can sign an extension with this team. I don't think it's a question of whether the Jazz want him to be around because they found somebody who could play at an all-star caliber level. He might not be an all-NBA guy, but he's a very, very good player. From your view, what do you think about his options in the offseason, whether he's a part of this thing going forward?
Yeah, listen, I think Lowry's made it pretty clear that he wants to stay in Utah. He wants to be part of the building process. He wants to be, you know, a huge part of the foundation of that. You know, I think for the Jazz front office, as much as anything, it's kind of figuring out, are you taking a clear direction? And, like, this is just me talking. This isn't, you know, talking to sources or anything, but there is, like, I could see a scenario where they decide, hey, maybe it makes sense to shop Lowry in the trade market to, you know, if you can get a haul for him, get a haul for him instead of committing to pay him what's going to be a max type of contract, if not just max period. For the simple fact that maybe you do need to bottom out to be able to position yourself to build a contender. So I could see that as a possibility, but I don't think there's any question that, you know, from the top of that organization on down, people have really enjoyed working with Lowry Markkanen. You know, see him as a guy who is a phenomenal face of the franchise type of guy. So if you're asking me, probably the most likely scenario is they work out an extension with them and, you know, and try to build pieces around him. I do think ultimately if the Jazz are going to be a very good team, he probably needs to be the number two guy.
Right, right. And I don't think that there's a question about that because they're still looking for that superstar. That was the whole point of the beginning of the conversation. The direction of this team is going to be determinant on when did they find someone who could be the number one on a really good team.
Easier said than done.
Yeah, it is.
Here's the thing. They need somebody better than Lowry Markkanen, and it's hard to find. It's hard
He's
to find guys
good.
Who are better than him. Exactly.
He's
they don't grow on trees.
Now, let me tell you about First Colony Mortgage. They've been serving the lending needs of Utah for more than 35 years. As a mortgage banker, First Colony Mortgage offers advantages over other lenders. Not only do they process mortgages, they also underwrite, fund, and close mortgage loans all in-house. Their expert team is ready to help you with your home financing needs. Just check them out. First Colony Mortgage, the official mortgage lender of the Utah Jazz. Luka and Kyrie, and then what they did at the trade deadline helped them as well when you get PJ Washington and then you see Daniel Gafford going to the starting lineup. How is this team post-trade deadline and where can they shake out in a very crowded Western Conference?
Yeah, so the Mavericks' priority really going back to the summer has been to get more athletic around Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. Smarter too, but the athleticism has been a huge priority. And, you know, you look at their starting lineup now, Derek Jones Jr., you know, airplane mode's his nickname for a reason. PJ Washington, a guy who 6 foot, you know, I don't know, 6'7", 6'8", but 7 foot plus wingspan and absolutely is a lob threat. You know, Daniel Gafford kind of becoming a tag team with Derek Lively the second. These are two guys that are, you know, top level rim runners in the league. Certainly limited offensively, but defensively, they struggle if they have to guard out on the perimeter. But in terms of just 7 foot type of guys who can spring off the floor, block shots, you know, catch lobs, they're pretty dang good as far as that goes. And the Mavericks have, look, they've given up a lot to try to kind of form this roster, upgrade the supporting cast around Luka and Kyrie. They are out from 27 to 30, whether it's just giving the pickup or the swap. They're out 2027 to 2030 on their first round draft capital. That's a tough place to be in. And, you know, let's just be honest, like, the Oklahoma City Thunder giving up 2028 swap rights to give them a 24 pick to send to Washington for Gafford, which was originally supposed to be part of a package for Kyle Kuzma, by the way. I think that might be one of those things that the Mavs got a little bit lucky on. Anyways, that, you know, that's Oklahoma City looking at the Mavs and saying 2028, we're going to bet against them. We, you know, we're going to short their stock for 2028. Because it is, like, it's no secret, when you have a player that's Luka Doncic's caliber, there is a pressure that comes along with it. And if you're not able to break through, how patient is he going to be? That's something that teams around the league, you know, there's a lot of vultures around the league kind of circling and trying to, you know, figure out that. On the flip side of it is, if you're not aggressive and you don't try to do everything you can to upgrade as much as possible in the here and now, you're kind of dooming yourself to a bad scenario down the road. So they have gotten better. They've done it at great cost. You know, they're still in the fight to avoid the play-in. They can fall anywhere from 6 to 8, depending on how they finish the season, Sacramento and Phoenix as well. They'll be underdogs in the first round, but I don't think teams are excited to see them. They've got two guys that have proven they can take over a series. Like, nobody's signing up eagerly to face Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving in the first round. But again, they, you know, they will be at underdogs in the first round.
Oh boy, Luka! I don't think nobody's saying that. Exum Island people here are still left on it. How have you seen him in his resurgence back into the league?
He's had a good year. And it's typical Dante Exum. It's been interrupted by injuries. And it's really unfortunate. When Kyrie went out and missed most of December, Exum was in the starting lineup and was a huge part of the reason. The biggest reason they were able to keep their heads above water is because Luka was playing just, you know, historically awesome basketball. But Exum was really enhancing him. Exum was was serving as a secondary playmaker, was knocking down shots, you know, was playing great on ball defense, really proved that he complemented and enhanced Luka's game. And the plan was that when Kyrie got back, Exum was going to stay in the starting lineup because they really liked having that third playmaker, that on-ball defense, you know, the kind of his ability to, he's become a good catch and shoot guy and then serve as a connector. Now, unfortunately, first game that Kyrie was back was that game we talked about in Utah, and Dante got hurt, and it was a foot injury that kept him out for a while. He comes back from that, you know, soon thereafter he's got a knee thing that keeps him out for a while. But he is a critical rotation player for the Mavericks. And, you know, to his credit, he went back to Europe and, you know, fixed his shot. Again, he has become a very good catch-and-shoot player. His ability to guard has never been in question. You know, his kind of ability to he's not a true point guard, but to serve as kind of like a complimentary playmaker, that's never been in question. And Dante's talked about this. A big part of fixing his shot was also just rebuilding his confidence, because it was a rough run for him in Utah. Then he washed out of the NBA pretty quickly after that.
It's good to see him back in the league, and it's good to see him having a little success with Dallas. San Antonio comes here on Wednesday, and I tell people every single opportunity that you get to watch Victor Wembanyama, take it. What has been your experience in seeing him live and watching what he can do?
Yeah, I mean, we've not seen somebody like that. Somebody that tall, that fluid of an athlete, that skilled, and he is very, very serious about maximizing his potential. You know, I got to kind of peek in and watch his post-game workout when they were in Dallas, just because it's in the hallway. There's not room for him to do it anywhere else. And I was really impressed by how hard he was working, how serious, how focused. Obviously, when you have that kind of frame, there's going to be some natural durability concerns, but I can just tell you he's doing everything he can possibly do to address those concerns. And, you know, his agent, Buna Njai, familiar to Jazz fans, Rudy Gobert's agent, has a lot of those guys from France. I think a lot, they're different players for sure, but I think a lot of the things that Rudy did under the Jazz's watch, as far as, you know, building up his body and not, you know, not trying to bulk up as much as possible, but functional strength, building that functional strength and program that they had Rudy on, I think that's something that's going to benefit Victor Wembanyama, just kind of giving him a guide. It's not going to be the exact same thing, but there is a guide, the way that Rudy was able to go from this super gangly kid that, you know, showed up in Salt Lake City, you know, to you know, a pretty physically powerful 7-footer. I think you'll see that with Wembanyama, and then, you know, the guy can shoot it from 30. I mean, his ball handling ability at that size is incredible. He has touch around the basket. He's a good passer. You know, we talked about the Jazz's challenge of, hey, how do you find that, you know, top shelf number one dude, which there's only a handful of those guys in the league. A lot of teams aren't able to find it. You know, you just do the best you can without one. Well, the Spurs have one. I mean, Wimby, I think he's going to be an All-NBA player next year. I think he's going to take, you know, he's going to be that good. The fact they only have 15 wins so far this season with Wimby tells you there's a ton of roster renovation that needs to happen. I think we'll look up in 3 years, and there might only be one or two guys on this roster other than Wembanyama that are still in San Antonio. So they've got a ton of work to do, and they need to get pretty good pretty soon, because I don't think that he's going to be patient. And he's made it clear, like, being this bad is not something that, and it's not something that he's going to be able to stomach for very long.
And he should be, because he's that good. He is that good that he can demand a team get better around him. People forget about Rudy's before and after, but you look at when he was playing with the Bakersfield Jam in the G League. Might have been the D League by the time that he started.
Yeah, still the D League.
To where he finished in Utah, the transformation body-wise is unreal what he was able to do.
Yeah, Rudy was not taking shirtless selfies when he was in Bakersfield.
Especially when he got tossed out of games. He wouldn't be working out during those periods of time.
Yeah, and the Jazz, look, give Dennis Lindsay and Isaiah Wright and, you know, all those people who were working with him in Utah a lot of credit. They helped turn Rudy Gobert into one of the most dominant defensive players of all time. But, you know, he put in the work. And like I said, I can just tell you, Wimby will put in the work. And the thing, like the talent level, all due respect to Rudy, it's not in the same stratosphere. It's not. Wimby right now is one of the most dominant defensive forces in the league. He has a chance to, without any hyperbole, be the best defensive player that we've ever seen, just because he can cover so much ground. He can get to so many shots. I mean, he's a taller, more mobile version of Gobert. And then he can be, you know, your primary offensive hub. He can be a guy who's going to, I think he'll end up scoring 25, 30 points per game and, you know, being a good facilitator. Wembanyama has a chance to do things that on a consistent basis that we've never seen before.
The clips this weekend of people turning down layups, that's it.
And again, we've seen that with Rudy. Yeah. And you're going to see a ton of that with Wembanyama. But the guy's averaging 3.5 blocks per game. I mean, and he blocks shots that other guys don't, right? Like he the first block of his career, he got out to an off-dribble mid-range pull-up from Kyrie Irving. Kyrie didn't get his mid-range pull-up blocked. And that's the first block shot of Wembanyama's career, which, by the way, Kyrie was reminded of that when the Spurs came through Dallas recently. He said, hey, you know what? That's kind of an honor. So when a guy like Kyrie Irving is saying, you know what, me being the first block of that guy's career is kind of an honor, that just tells you the way that people around players around the NBA are looking at Wembanyama. A lot of these guys are just as much in awe as we are.
Houston, finish up with them. They're coming on strong.
Ooh.
I know there's a ban on talking about the big market teams for your Hoop Collective crew, but
not the big market teams, just the 9 and 10 in the West.
Well, can they catch the 9 and 10 in the West, Houston?
They're breathing down the neck of 10, that's for sure. And they're probably about to win their 9th straight game. They've got the Trailblazers coming into Houston. After that, I'm actually going to see them later this week in Oklahoma City. I mean, can they? Absolutely. Like, absolutely. Jalen Green has gone from really, honestly, as recently as a month and a half ago, was considered a pretty big disappointment.
I thought it was a chucker.
Yeah, and by the way, Ime Udoka might have had a similar opinion if you'd give him some truth serum. Certainly, if the truth serum was crunch time minutes, that was pretty telling because Jalen Green often wasn't getting those. But, I mean, we're going – I think right now he's probably the front runner for Western Conference Player of the Month in March. He has been unbelievable. And I tell you, they actually have been hit pretty hard by injuries during this month, and they've only lost one game. Obviously, Alper and Şengün. Fortunately, it's not an injury that's going to require surgery, but a severely sprained ankle and bone bruise. Cam Whitmore, a rookie who is really, I mean, he can put it in the hole. You know, he's kind of a black hole, but he tends to put the ball in the bucket. You know, he's been out with a knee sprain. Tari Eason's out for the season because he needed surgery on his leg. I mean, those are three rotation players, including, you know, their franchise cornerstone center in Şengün, a guy who is certainly a most improved player candidate and is, you know, averages 20-plus points per game. Like, he's a double-double machine who's a phenomenal passer. It's not out of the realm of possibility that Şengün can come back late in the regular season. Obviously, the first thing is, will he be medically cleared? They're not going to rush him back if he's not physically
ready. But when he went down, I think there's just an assumption of, well, that's the last we'll see. You know, the Rockets will fade. And they haven't faded. If he's cleared and they're fighting for a play-in spot, he'll be back on the floor.
You didn't even mention Jabari Smith, who unfortunately Jazz fans didn't get to watch him because he got into the kerfuffle with Chris Dunn. He's a winning player.
Yeah, and you know what? He has actually slid to the center spot, at least defensively, since Şengün's been out. But he's a very good, versatile, young defensive player who is a complementary offensive player. He's kind of what I think Taylor Hendricks has a chance to be. And Jabari Smith Jr. is going to get better and better and better. He might be offensively, probably has more potential. The comp for him coming out was Rashard Lewis with all defensive potential, which that's a hell of a player. He also had a rough rookie year though. Like, look, they were getting just blown out on a regular basis. And if you go back and look at his rookie numbers, especially earlier in the season, they were ugly. He wasn't ready to play minutes in the NBA. He was just kind of thrown to the wolves, but he's made a significant step this season. And then Amen Thompson, you know, the number four overall pick, who since Şengün's been out, he's slid into the starting lineup, and he can't shoot at all. He's a sub 20% three-point shooter, but he is a 6'7", like elite, like top 1% in the NBA type of athlete with feel. Like, the comp for him is a young Ben Simmons, which that's why everybody was super excited about Ben Simmons' potential, you know, rookie with a question mark. Remember that guy? So that's kind of the comp. And since he's slid in the starting lineup, he's an absolute on-ball defensive stopper. Like, he has a chance to be one of the best on-ball defenders in the NBA at 6'7", 210, with crazy athleticism. You know, gets his hands on the ball a lot, whether he's blocking shots, getting steals, deflections. But they've been playing him basically at the five offensively, you know, playing him in the dunker spot. And he gets a lot of dunks. He can get up there.
And it started at Summer League. He was really good in Vegas.
Yeah, and he was really good in Vegas. Unfortunately, he got hurt early on in Vegas. And then he got, I think it was a shoulder in Vegas. And then he suffered a pretty severe ankle sprain early on in the season. So he didn't get a lot of minutes until fairly recently. But again, he's really showed exactly why the Rockets were excited to get him with a fourth overall pick.
What would you like to promote, Tim? Got the Hoop Collective. You got your work at ESPN. Is there a piece you're working on? Anything else we can promote?
You know what? Of particular interest to Jazz fans, I don't know when this will run, but I would just say be on the lookout for a piece that I have on Rudy Gobert and how he has come to handle being the most disrespected star in the NBA.
It's something weird about how much people really don't like Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, and I had a very pleasant conversation with him about it. Went out and got dinner with him in Oklahoma City, of all places, a little bit ago. And you know Rudy, when you get Rudy talking, he's not afraid to tell you exactly what he thinks. He's got some theories on that. We also had a pretty in-depth discussion on his darkness retreat. He's an interesting character.
And he reads it. That's the thing. He does read the criticism about him.
I think he's gotten better about not reading it.
Okay, good.
And I think that's a big thing. You know, for a long, long time, Rudy convinced himself that reading it and liking the critical tweets, whether it's from a peer or some Yahoo who has league pass, you know, for a long time, he convinced himself that stuff served as fuel for him. And I think he's come to the realization that what it really was is the waste of his mental energy. And look, I think Rudy has matured, aside from the occasional money sign gesture to the referees and doubling down on a post game. But hey, he's about to welcome his first child into the world. You know, he's about a couple months away from that, I believe, month and a half or so. And Rudy is really in a good place mentally and
you know, in the standings right now in Minnesota. And I don't have to tell you just how much stuff he got last year for the haul that the Jazz received for him. And then the Wolves scuffling and struggling ended up, you know, scrapping for an eighth seed, scrapping with each other in the regular season finale, ended up in the eighth seed and getting dismissed in the first round. There was a lot on him. He's had a big time bounce back here, and I do think he's going to get his fourth Defensive Player of the Year award.
He is our liaison to the Hoop Collective, Tim McMahon, on Roundball Roundup on UtahJazz.com. Tim, appreciate it.
Appreciate you having me. Adios, amigo.